It's time for the Swap Shop Hour. Give us a call at 740-383-9944. It's time for Swap Shop. Come on, friends. If you're going to sell it, we're going to tell it. So pick up your phone and let me make it perfectly clear. It's time for Swap Shop. Good old Swap Shop. We're gonna try and sell it here. 740-383-9944.
Hey, this is Glenn Coble and this is Swap Shop. I love to play that just to annoy Charlie. Charlie Evers does not like that song. I don't understand that at all. Anyway, you are listening to Swap Shop. I'm Glenn Coble, your host for the next, it looks like about 42 minutes. And we'll talk about, if you're interested in selling something or buying something, feel free to call us at 743-9944, 740-383-9944. Now, we're really not emphasizing people to call in during Swap Shop during this coronavirus. It's just makes it a little hard to, meet with other people, sell them things. We'd rather you hang on for a few months and maybe we'll have more opportunity a little later to do that sort of thing. Anyway, today I'm going to talk about the Spanish flu that hit America in back in 1918. I also wanted to remind you there was a gentleman that did call in. He had an idea of he would like to help repair bicycles. It's kind of a hobby of his, but he'll do it for you for free. If you have a bicycle that needs to be repaired, he called in and said he would do it for free. I'm certain he would take a little tip if you decide to do that. But his number, by the way, if you're interested in getting your bike repaired for free, his number is 740-382-8655. Let me give you that number again. 740-382-8655. I'll give you that number a little bit later in the show as well. But that's about all I have right now for Swap Shop. If you are interested or you'd like to express an opinion, you're more than welcome to call 740-383-9944. One of the guys that I played with as a folk trio back in the long time ago, Joe Peterson, his a relative of his, was involved in the pandemic back in 1918. I thought I'd give you a little background about that, and then I'm going to play an interview that Joe did with his, I think it's like a cousin, a great cousin or a grand cousin or whatever they call him. The gentleman was very old at the time. It was the interview took place in 2014. And I'm glad that Joe did the interview because he has since passed. He was 90. I think he was 96 at the time. So he was a young guy during the very young guy during the Spanish flu. The Spanish flu of 1918 makes the coronavirus 19 seem kind of it's horrible, but it kind of, the Spanish flu kind of overdid the coronavirus. It lasted almost 36 months, and one of the reasons why I'm pointing this out to you is because it kind of shows how this can a huge outbreak like this can last a long time. We can have it come back and come back, you know. So until we get a shot for it, I think we're going to be putting up with this for a while. It lasted, the flu lasted 36 months from January of 1918 through December of 1920. So that lasted a long time. Listen to this. It affected 500 million people. 500. Now, this is back when the Earth only had a billion or maybe 2 billion instead of 8 billion like we have now. It was about a third of the world's population got this virus. Now, it didn't kill everybody, but it did kill an awful lot. It killed, and they only could estimate how many it killed because they really didn't have any idea how many. You know, there were a lot of people out on the prairies still. There were people moving west at this time. They're still moving west, but back then they were having to put up with Native Americans who were not happy with them moving west back in 1918. Let's see, my father was 10 years old at the time, and my mother was 8 years old at the time. But the death toll was estimated, and believe me, they couldn't really get a good handle on it. It was estimated between 17 million to up to 50 million people died from this worldwide pandemic. Some people have estimated it got as high as 100 million. So it was one of the deadliest epidemics ever to greet the human population. And there are a lot of disputes on how many people actually died. As you can tell, from 17 million to 100 million, that's a pretty wide amount. And then for some reason or other, we decided to downplay it because of World War One, and then it came back. That's really one of the problems that we have to face right now. We cannot let our guard down. If we let our guard down, it looks like, to most of the scientists, it looks like we will get a resurgence of this sort of thing. Well, anyway, let me see if I can find on my phone this interview. And it's about 6 minutes long, but I don't think you want to miss it because it's really quite interesting. Let's see if I've got it here. It's quite interesting. It isn't the entire interview. Joe told me the interview is like 30 minutes long, and this is only 6 minutes of it. But it's probably the more dramatic 6 minutes of the interview. And he interviewed Ted Mattson, M-A-T-T-S-O-N. And this interview took place... I'm sorry. I said it was 14. The interview took place back in 03. Yeah, because if it had been in 14, he would have been a baby at the time of the pandemic. But he was, let's see, if the interview took place in 03 and he was like 96 years old, well, I'm not going to do the math, bore you to death with me doing the math. But let me pull up this interview with Mr. Mattson. It lasts about, it lasts 5 minutes and 44 seconds. And I think you will be surprised at some of the things he says. Hang on.
They had three children, and I enjoyed going out there because I could play with them and, you know, being 5 or 6 years old, and they were maybe a little older, but not much. And I remember one day, my mother called all the children in and said, "We have to say a prayer for the Oscar Mattson family because they're sick." And she prayed, but it was too late because they already had the flu. And the first child died, and people who got the flu drowned. And the reason they drowned is that their lungs filled up with pus and they couldn't breathe. And I remember they told about one man who walked into the D hospital up there and dropped dead right in the foyer because he couldn't breathe. But anyway, the Manson called the undertaker and said, I've got a child of mine who died, and can you come and pick her up? And the undertaker said, well, I can't come today or tomorrow. I'm too busy. But what you should do is wrap the child in a blanket and put it out on the snow. It was about 2 feet of snow out there. And then I'll come and get it when I get time. So they did that. And then another child died, and they did that. And then another one died, and they did that. And then the wife died, and he did that. And I think when he died, they found him in the house. But that shook me up because I knew these people very well. And it just scared me about this same thing. And in the meantime, for some reason, I've never been able to figure out, my dad moved the family down in the hotel in a small apartment there. And I kind of liked that because I could ride my tricycle up and down the halls and so on. And when this flu thing came about, they moved the family up at my grandmother's house. She lived alone up on 24th Street. And I guess my dad thought that we'd be safer there. And he stayed in the hotel and went around and gave the tenants who were sick, what few there were, whiskey, trying to think some way to keep them alive. I don't know whether he did any good or not, but...
he probably didn't mind the flu as bad.
Well, there are people dropping dead every place. And
what was the feeling of that, generally, as far as, that's an age that we've never lived in. The feeling of that paradigm, you know.
This flu, apparently, now I know, started in China, almost where the same SARS started.
Yeah.
And then covered the whole world. There were people dying in every country. I lost a cousin who died in a army camp. He was drafted, and they were doing their work and so on, and he died because he got the flu. So people are dying right and left all over, and they were afraid to go to anybody. They didn't go to meetings. They didn't do anything. My dad didn't want us to go to the market even, and he brought us food from the cafe in the hotel. I remember he brought little boxes of cereal that he could buy today, but we had that, and he brought us milk, and he took care of us. I'm surprised he didn't get it because he was taking care of all those men who were half dead in the hotel.
Did you happen to witness that thing with the Oscar Manson family, the tragedy of them all laying out in the snow? Did you happen to, or did you go to their funeral or what?
No, I don't think they even had a funeral.
There were just so many people dying.
I don't remember anything about a funeral.
Think they maybe didn't have, did they not have many funerals for these people just because so many people were dying?
They might have had graveside services, something like that. Because the people were afraid to get together with anybody, you know.
I see.
If you're walking down the street and some guy was coughing, you sure as the devil wouldn't get near him. And that's how bad it was.
Very similar to this.
And pretty soon, of course, it ran its course and killed enough people.
Well, we're discussing this right now in July. This is July 11th of 2003.
All right, kind of an awesome, not awesome, kind of a hair chilling reflection of the Spanish flu pandemic back in 1918. Did it not sound very familiar? Kind of scary familiar. It even started over in China, they believe. I don't know. I wish I had answers, but now apparently they think they've found something that they might be able to use helping people that get the virus. That would be good. That would give us some hope. I'm not going to hold my breath just because we really don't know whether that will work. But they have very positive feelings about it. So let's hope that it's all going to pass in the near future. I'm getting tired of hearing about it. I'm getting tired of talking about it, but I think it's something that we're going to have to deal with for quite some time to come. Well, it's 12:33. You're listening to Shop. Swap Shop. I was going to say Shop Swap, and that was not right. You're listening to Swap Shop with Glenn Coble here on WWGH on 107.1. That last interview was with Mr. Mattson, who was involved. He was 5 or 6 years old and remembered all this from when he was a child about the flu of 1918 and how horrible that attacked people. Now, we do have some relief, I guess, from some of the symptoms. We have intubators that will help you keep your breath even though you're drowning in your own fluids. We just surpassed yesterday 58,000 deaths, which is what we had in Vietnam. I think it's over 60 as of today. Vietnam, I think we were at active war. America was actively involved in that war for about 10 years. That got us the 58,000 deaths. This has only been going on since, what, December maybe in China? And we are going to have millions, or at least, you would think, at least 1 million deaths from this type of thing. Anyway, let's hope for the best, and let's try to be as smart as we can be. I wear a mask outside all the time. I know there are people that do not wear a mask outside, I think. And I understand it's of limited value incoming. But it's more you're concerned about the people you're meeting and the outgoing. It'll help keep the droplets of cough or the droplets of just breath from getting on people that you're talking to. But like we do here in the station, try to stay at least 6 feet away from each other. Scott and I were at least 6 feet. We had 2 desks in between us, and we were both sitting in chairs. So we have at least 6 feet between us and maybe a little bit more. I wear my mask and when I come in, and we try our best, and all we can do is, and the reason why I continue to do this, and I'm sure the reason why Scott continues to do the broadcast, is we're trying to help Marion get through a really tough time. We were number one, and not that that's good, we were number one in the infections because of the prison. I was kind of stunned the other day when I heard on national television that even though we have so many people that are ill at MCI, 95% of them are asymptomatic. Now, how can that possibly be? I guess I don't know. Well, let's change over to a little bit lighter discussion. You know, we're not very far. This is the last day of April. I'm so excited to be planting stuff out in my yard. I have lots of little sprouts of lettuce coming up. I have leeks starting to poke their little heads through the soil. I have spinach poking its head through the soil. I have my garlic is doing very well. It's getting very tall. So having fun. I actually got out yesterday and mowed my front yard so my neighbors wouldn't be embarrassed that they lived by me. The grass is growing pretty fast. I haven't done the backyard. Sometimes we lose our dog out back because it's gotten up to 8 inches or so. That I was going to do today, but I don't think I'm going to make it. But Sunday's supposed to be really nice, and that'll be the day that I do my backyard. Okay. So, but today we're going to talk about, because it's only less than a week away, Cinco de Mayo. A lot of people think Cinco de Mayo is a celebration of Mexican independence, but it isn't. In reality, there's quite a story about it, but it's a holiday that honors us. It honors, let's see, what I've lost the name of the battle that the Mexicans won. I'll find it here. It's many people believe that Cinco de Mayo marks Mexico's gaining of independence, but it doesn't. It celebrates the Mexican army's victory over France. A lot of people don't know that they were fighting France, but they were fighting France, and it was in the Battle of Puebla on May 5th, 1862. That's really where Cinco de Mayo came from. Now, Cinco de Mayo is not intended to be a day where you go drink tequila or margaritas. That wasn't why it was started. It was just a celebration of day that they won the Battle of Puebla. It's kind of morphed into a Mexican Independence Day. But, you know, the Mexican Independence Day is really September 16th. It's 3 days after my wife's birthday. But those of us ignorant northerners kind of need an excuse to drink margaritas, so we call it Cinco de Mayo, the Independence Day of Mexico, which it is not. We go out and get crazy and drink tequila and drink margaritas and have Spanish food and just celebrate way too much for somebody else's victory that nobody remembers, or at least nobody in this country remembers. It was part of the Franco-Mexican War, that Battle of Pueblo. And it says here that they had more weaponry and men at the disposal, but the French still lost the battle. Now, there have been some pretty crazy battles with the Mexican. You remember what was it? Daniel Boone and so many Americans were killed by a Mexican attack on the Alamo. There was terrific war going on down around the Southwest. What we now call is the American Southwest, but it was, at the time it was highly contested. Napoleon III was involved in the taking over of the Pueblo. He wanted to turn the Pueblo area into a base that would help the Confederate Army during the American Civil War. That's kind of interesting. It was going to be kind of a stronghold for the Confederate Army. And some historians have argued that had he succeeded, the Civil War could have ended up with a different outcome. That would be quite interesting. Now, there's always Mexican food restaurants and Mexican food recipes and Mexican food involved in Cinco de Mayo. And like Scott and I were talking today, something he was looking forward to tonight. He isn't a taco guy. He was trying to find out something that would be good to eat. And so if you have something that you like to have for Cinco de Mayo, give him a call on his show tomorrow morning and tell him, give him your recipes. Oh, by the way, you are listening, by the way, to Swap Shop here on WWGH 107.1. I'm Glenn Coble, and our Swap Shop is kind of casual now that we're in the middle of this virus. We don't really want people going and spreading it around, but we do have a gentleman that will help you if you're in need of bike repairs, and he'll do it for nothing. How about that? That's a good person. Now, I'm sure he wouldn't mind taking a little tip and he didn't tell me to tell you that. He said he'd do it for free, but I'm just saying it's probably a pretty good idea if you could give him a tip. If you want to get your bike repaired, give him a call, 740-382-8655. And if you have something that you'd like to offer to people, anything that you can do for people, you know, go get their groceries for them or something like that, you're welcome to call us here, 740-383-9944 here at Swap Shop. I'm Glenn Coble, and we're talking about Cinco de Mayo. Even though the Mexicans lost the battle, even though the French lost the battle, Mexico still fell under French control for about 5 years. Emperor Maximilian, if you remember that name, from Australia, was kind of put in charge of Mexico at the time. Kind of an interesting situation. Lots of names come into the Cinco de Mayo celebration that we don't think anything of while we're having our margaritas. Mexican President Benito Juarez, and I assume he was the gentleman that the city Juarez was named after, the President Benito Juarez made it a holiday. And it was the anniversary of the Battle of Puebla. It was declared a national holiday and became known as the Battle of Cinco de Mayo. And that's why we call it Cinco de Mayo. And obviously, Cinco de Mayo means the 5th of May. but on May 9th, 1862, President Juarez turned it into a holiday for Mexico. Now, it's not celebrated in Mexico nearly as much as it's celebrated in the United States. But I think it's celebrated in the United States as an excuse to go out and have margaritas. Went to a place down in Worthington, a restaurant down there, a Mexican restaurant in Worthington, where they serve margaritas in a fish bowl. I mean, it is that big. I swear the top of the snifter, I guess you'd call it a snifter because it's shaped like that, the top of the snifter must be 12 inches across, and they fill that thing. And that the last time I was there, I saw two people, a young man and a young woman, enjoying it, one of them together. They couldn't possibly have been able to stand up to get out of that restaurant. Anyway, alcohol has become part of the name of Cinco de Mayo in the United States, I'm afraid. All right, let's continue on and see what else happened. President Franklin Roosevelt helped bring Cinco de Mayo celebrations to the United States. The United States started to celebrate after President Roosevelt created a thing that they called the Good Neighbor Policy in 1933, and that was to improve relationships with the Latin American countries. And so, therefore, in 1933, and it was a good time for the United States to find a reason to have a good time, they decided the Good Neighbor Policy would lead to more celebration of Cinco de Mayo in the United States. Now, you remember that our depression had started, 3 years earlier? Almost 4 years earlier, and this was just a way to loosen up and have a bit of a good time. And we still have parades and that sort of thing throughout the country. Right now, we're not going to be having parades, I'm guessing, for Cinco de Mayo, but with kids all decked out in their beautiful Mexican colored fineries and that sort of thing. It's been a tradition, by the way, in California for a long time. In 1863, Mexican miners in the town of Columbia broke into a celebration when they received the news that people were resisting French occupancy. So, therefore, the California kind of jumped the bandwagon on that one and jumped in and celebrated Cinco de Mayo before the rest of us did. It was a big thing in Chicago when I used to work at DePaul University. Cinco de Mayo was pretty important, but again, it went back to the bars were full. We enjoyed it. I drank a little bit more back then. The largest Cinco de Mayo celebration, by the way, is held in Los Angeles. It's a huge celebration. And let's see what it says about that. It's held on Alvira Street in California. And it's known, that's where they have the major Cinco de Mayo parade and stuff. But it's a huge celebration in California. It does have a place in American history. Throughout the 60s and 70s, Cinco de Mayo became closely associated with Chicano rights movement in the United States. If you'll recall correctly, the farm workers were very involved and still are. As a matter of fact, it's kind of bouncing back because of this virus that we have. How do you find people that want to work in the fields and be close to each other? Now, I'm guessing that they are told to stay separated, but most of the rules that we have are unenforceable. And the rules the government has made, now they're kind of softening them up and saying, these are rules, but you can determine whether you want to follow them or not, which I find annoying. But anyway, back in the 60s and 70s, Chicano rights movement kind of fired up the Cinco de Mayo thing. Let's see, it was recognized as a national holiday in the United States in 2005. And that was George W. Bush was president at the time, and he made a proclamation that we should celebrate Cinco de Mayo. I'm trying to figure out why we had the swelling of favor for Cinco de Mayo, but apparently it happened, and Congress issued a resolution recognizing it as a historical significant day, Cinco de Mayo. Now, they are our neighbors. I don't think we celebrate Canadian independence. I'm not sure that there is a Canadian Independence Day. I imagine there is, But anyway, that's when we started officially celebrating it in 2005 under George W. Bush, the president. Washington, D.C. is, by the way, this is kind of interesting. Washington, D.C. holds their own running of the Chihuahuas. I'm certain it's not nearly as dangerous as running of the bulls over in, where is that? Is that in Portugal or is that in Spain? I'm not sure. Wherever it is, I'm sure running of the Chihuahuas isn't as dangerous as running of the bulls. But having been a Chihuahua owner, when my wife and I were first married, she had a Chihuahua. His name was Pepe Yo-Yo. And the reason why it was Yo-Yo on the end of his first name, Pepe, Pepe would jump up and down, just bounce up and down and up and down and up and down forever. But Pepe Yo-Yo was a true Chihuahua in that he was very protective of his mama, his owner. And we were first married. Pepe was our puppy. And Pepe wouldn't let me in bed with his mama. That's really rough when you're first married. And so what we had to do is Carol, my wife, had to take food out into the living room, put it down. He'd go out, get the food. She'd run back into the bedroom and slam the door. And then he'd scratch at the door for a few minutes, but he'd be okay. Anyway, Washington, D.C. has their own running of the Chihuahuas. I assume they do that on Cinco de Mayo. I'm not sure of that, but I'm guessing that that's true. Mariachi music was created in Mexico and dates back to the 19th century. I'm not sure how that's involved with Cinco de Mayo, but it is involved with Mexico. And it originated in Jalisco, Mexico. I don't know where that is. The musicians would travel from town to town singing songs of revolutionary heroes and enemies and carrying news from one place to another. So that's, I guess, the tie in there, that they would carry revolutionary music of heroes and carry it around from one place to the other. You know what mariachi music is. They usually have a giant guitar and usually a cornet or a trumpet and violins and sometimes a string bass. They always are dressed in what I guess you would call is typical Mexican garb. And you know the sound of that type of music. I love that type of music. It's kind of Mexican folk music. And since I sang American folk music, I guess that's why I like it. The traditional dance that they do on Cinco de Mayo is called Baile Folclorico. Baile Folclorico. It's a traditional Mexican folk dance, and it dates back to about the 1810 War of Independence. And so, therefore, it's connected with Cinco de Mayo because it's connected to the War of Independence back in 1810. It's characterized by both colorful clothing and mariachi music. So you get to listen to those mariachi bands, but also you get to look at that. They have beautiful costumes. It's called the Baile Folclorico. Folclorico. I'm probably mispronouncing it terribly. I'm sorry about that for those of you who speak Spanish fluently. These colorful dresses that they wear, you see them all the time on Cinco de Mayo in the parades, all the time. And when I say colorful, they are more than colorful. They're absolutely gorgeous with color. They're called Puebla dresses, which is kind of interesting because that's really what Cinco de Mayo is celebrating, is the victory at Puebla. Now they are they're available in all sorts of different products. But one of the things that I saw, two of the things that I saw that I was kind of interested in, you can get a Puebla dress in cotton, which is what you would expect, but they also make them in bark, like off of a tree. I'm sure it's not that heavy a bark, but you can get it in bark, and you can also get it in agave, which is what they make agave is what they make tequila out of. And you can buy a dress that's made out of bark or agave that's called a Puebla dress. I'd like to see those. I'd like to see how they make them thin enough to wear as a dress. And there is an official holiday dish. So, Scott, if you're listening, this is what you should have for Cinco de Mayo. Mole poblano. Mole poblano is considered to be the official dish of the holiday because it is traditionally eaten in the town of Puebla. It's a sauce that contains chili pepper, chocolate, and spices, and they put it over things. It also looks like it has sesame seeds on it. And it looks like in this case they put it over, I really can't tell what that, it looks like maybe baked potato. But the mole poblano is contains chili pepper, chocolate, and other spices. So that, Scott, if you're listening, that's what you've got to have. All right, you're listening to Swap Shop with Glenn Coble here on WWGH. We're just about out of time. Let me give you the name of that, the phone number of that gentleman who will repair your bike for free. And he called in and wanted us to tell people about it. His phone number is 740-382-8655, and we're just about out of here. We'll wish you a happy Cinco de Mayo, because I think that's on Tuesday, so it's before we'll get together again. And you've been listening to Glenn Coble here on Swap Shop on WWGH 107.1, and we'll have more next Wednesday with my progressive life. And then again on Thursday for Swap Shop again, where we're not doing a lot of swapping. But stay healthy and stay away from people and have a wonderful
You're
time.
Listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio, the talking place. For legendary comedian...